to receive the presentation, and if in the process of the meeting we end up correcting, we will ask the meeting to also consider the minutes. Without much ado, may I officially declare this meeting open and welcome all of you to this meeting of the Joint Standing Committee on the Financial Management of Parliament. In terms of the agenda, we have got only one item on the agenda, main item on the agenda, and I want to believe we don't have additional items other than this one from members. I don't see a hand. It means members are happy with the agenda. Are there any apologies? Of course, the one that already we have here is of Honorable Jens Pearson. Are there other apologies, members? Okay, yes, he did indicate. Yes. Any other apologies? Sure.
Ms. Mente is also involved in another engagement.
Okay, thanks. Any other? Okay, thank you very much. Unfortunately, we are also correcting at this meeting, which means we can take whatever decisions that are necessary. In terms of the main item on the agenda, the Acting Secretary to Parliament is here to handle the item, and without much ado, may I give this opportunity over to her to lead us on the item. Thank you. Over to you, Acting Secretary to Parliament.
Thank you very much, Co-Chairperson, and good afternoon, good evening, Honourable Members.
The request by members is that you take not more than 30 minutes in your presentation.
Yes.
Thank you.
Co-Chairs, it will even be lesser because this is indeed a historical document that I presume members would have read, and what would be useful would be subsequent discussions. I will not rush through it, but I will not waste time on self-explanatory areas. What we've done is we've just extracted highlights of the annual report of 17-18. And we just want to start off by saying this is the fourth year where Parliament receives a clean audit since this is the fifth Parliament. And we're hoping that at the end of the cycle of the fifth Parliament, we shall have sustained the clean audit. The first area of highlight that we wanted to present to yourselves is the core work of Parliament. In terms of our annual report, we provide you with the work that has been done by members, and in that we actually pick a few areas that relate to oversight and accountability, and that's the first line we're talking to. And in that we actually reflect on matters that came up to Parliament. This includes the inquiries around certain SOEs, and that we had at least four inquiries instituted by Parliament, and this is what members were busy doing. And then, of course, we do indicate the extent to which Parliament was able to fill the positions of the various statutory bodies by appointing the various members of the board. And we have that as your MDDA, CGE, ICASA, and PAP. On the right side of the slide, what we're capturing there is the activity of Parliament for both houses, and in that we indicate the questions that we raise at the National Assembly and the questions raised at the NCOP, and this covers both oral and written questions from the Cabinet, almost emphasizing the extent to which Parliament was able to hold government accountable. This is all in our annual report. The next level, we're looking at the legislative process or the legislative work that Parliament has done. we summarize, and we may not capture everything, but what it indicates is both the NA and the NCOP has 11 bills that were assented to by the President. And we also add the fact that in that very year, Parliament remained seized with the high-level panel engagements, which were to assess the impact of laws that have been passed over 20 years by this democratic Parliament. Obviously, that high-level panel did not necessarily cover all the legislation as from 1994, but picked a few, which means that into the sixth Parliament, there's going to be a process whereby in your legacy report, you will have to actually make a recommendation on how that report has to be processed and the follow-up on the recommendations of the report. We also do indicate public engagements convened in the various provinces driven by the NCOP, and then, of course, public engagements convened in the various provinces that is taking Parliament to the people. What we then do on the following that, we tried to look at the extent to which the public has participated in the work of Parliament. And you'll see later on that we also refer to the research that we've set in place, and I think we did share the research with members of the committee, which is assesses the people's awareness of the business of Parliament. On this side, what we're looking at is the extent to which we've used social media, mainstream media, profiling the work of Parliament, and we also give you numerics on the left-hand side that shows you the extent to which members of the public have engaged with Parliament and the platforms that they use. So we do look at the levels of consultation, partnership, involvement, and at the bottom is level of information. So by the end of the financial year, as reported, we had about 16,000 tour visits. We had 434 public materials distributed throughout the country. And, of course, we know that it cannot be enough. However, what we're seeing quite satisfying is the fact that there's been an increase in our Twitter followers, there's been an increase in our YouTube channels, and, of course, Parliament TV is only sitting at 1.9, and this is precisely because it's not necessarily on the free-to-air platform. The next part of our presentation speaks to the strengthening of corporate government. This is the agenda, the work of the NCOP at large, and it shows first the type of interventions that were approved in local government, and we enumerate the various interventions there, and these are carried out through various oversight visits by the NCOP largely. And then on the right part of the slide, what we're sharing with yourself is the work that is done in the sector, and I think honourable members do know that the sector constitutes of all the speakers of the legislature, and they have a speakers forum that is on slide 6. That's what we're presenting there. And, of course, one of the things that have come up that is still inconclusive is the sector bill. There is a draft sector bill, and maybe if I were just to say what is the purpose of the sector bill, it is precisely to identify the sector as an entity, like a third arm of state. The legislative sector is the only part that of the third arm of state that's not properly constituted. We have 9 legislations plus Parliament, but we don't have an act that establishes us as an entity. As a result, this also impacts on how we can actually appropriate budget from National Treasury, how we can engage in a shared vision in terms of our oversight work, in terms of accountability, in terms of also ensuring that we have harmonization of the various policies that we have. And then what's also a challenge is because the sector doesn't have an established act like you have with the Public Service Act, we have varying employment conditions right across the 10. And what this sector bill tries to do is to try and harmonize and try and really systematize how we are employed as well as how we conduct our business as a sector. The sector bill was drafted through the Speakers Forum and presented, and we know that it has been given to Parliament but it's not been processed yet because it has to go into the parliamentary system. And that's what we think should be taken up by at least a multi-party team or an ad hoc team, but both Paso and Pindela are actually, they remain seized with that process. And then, of course, the sector does have a strategic plan that looks at realignment of the NDP, the African agenda, the SADC, and the SDGs. And what we're trying to do there is to track the delivery against all those outcomes. And the chair, both the chair and the speaker are, the chair and the speaker are chairs of the speaker's forum that is supported by the various secretaries of the legislature. The next area, which has been quite a lot of activity, is that of international engagement. Honourable members will know, of course, that we have the PGIR. We also participate in bilateral exchanges and also on multilateral platforms. What we're showing you there is the various platforms that members of Parliament participate in and some of the areas where we actually provide leadership, and that is the Commonwealth Women's Parliamentarians, the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association, and of course our activity, shall I say, members' activities on the platforms of your European Union, SADC PF, and we capture that because these are also cost drivers in our budget. And somewhere we're hoping that into the sixth parliament we'll begin to budget carefully around the activities that are being championed by the Parliament of South Africa. And the details are definitely in the annual report. The following slide shows us the significant improvement of performance. Our members will realize that in the year 2015 to 2016, our performance, overall performance was sitting at 45.4%. This is overall performance of the targets we've met. And then 16-17, the performance increased to 48.7%. And as I'm reporting now, overall performance is at 57.8%. What has changed? What has changed is from 2015 to 16, what we did is we stopped bean counting. We decided instead of measuring the number of reports, we then measure turnaround of when do we produce the reports that we have to do in support of the work of Parliament. And we are pleased to say that there is a significant increase, improvement in the performance, albeit we do have some difficulties that we're still experiencing, particularly refining our technical indicators and making sure that they're measurable. The one thing that keeps coming from this committee is, are we measuring the quality? And I must hasten to say that we're still not at a level of measuring the quality of what we produce. However, we're looking at turnaround time because we have the service charter that we measure ourselves against. And on that slide, we actually provide members with areas that we've actually improved on. The last point is really on Parliament performance relating to minutes, which was at 26, moving from a base of 26% to actually a base of 95%. And this is the extent to which we are able to produce minutes of committees to enable committees to do their work. So there is a major improvement there. And obviously, some of the things that we've spoken about, key achievements, we have them there, that we've had executive and management coaching program for staff. We've had 14 audits, as I've explained. We were able to implement, at least we've been able to implement a member-centric application, which is my Parliament application. Library has migrated digitally. Of course, we had a conference on international with an international theme, Women in the Changing World of Work, which was linked to the UN. And then the PBO had a conference on a second African network conference, which invites the African offices of the budget office in Africa. The next slide explains areas that we did not meet targets. I must say that the measurement of performance is a blunt instrument. We do not give orange. We don't give any amber color. We don't give any yellow color. it is either you've met your 100% or you have not met it. So even if there's a discrepancy that is statistically insignificant, like 0.3%, we don't round it up at all. First and foremost, the first strategic objective that we did not meet is that of tabling in 5 days. And in terms of the FMPPLA, there are set dates. Once we submit a report, it has to be tabled, and by tabling, it must be on the ATC, and it's given 5 days. In that case, what we've also done is revisited that section or that that section in the Act, because it has become very impractical to do so. By tabling, it means the accounting officer submits, and then 5 days, the executive authority must have signed, and it must be ATC'd. So you will notice, honorable members, that we have those two rates where we are not able to meet the 5 day deadline. And we have revisited that. Further on, I'm going to only talk to the rate. Obviously, the regulations also, we take the FMPPLA and measure whether we are actually abiding or adhering to the Act itself. And it does reveal the facts around tabling, around submissions. And then, of course, 2.1 service provision as per the service charter. You'll see later on we show you what the service charter is on slide 15. And there's been areas where we have missed our target, and this is largely when there were niches and a plethora of mini plenaries, wherein there was need for translations in all of the mini plenaries that were running concurrently. And that, of course, impacted on our available resources in terms of human resources. 3.1, the target was missed there by 4%. And, of course, because we had set ourselves a target that says we want to increase the number of people participating in parliamentary processes. And then client satisfaction, we missed that by 3.5 under target. And then, of course, the other client satisfaction, which talks to the services that we offer, wherein I think honorable members will remember the report actually identifies the areas where we're doing well, your ICT, research, and I think legal, if I'm not wrong. But it shows the levels of satisfaction. This is done independently. It is done independently where members have to express their levels of satisfaction on the various services that we offer. And we are currently running the next round of the research. I'd like to encourage honorable members to really participate. It is computer-based. It will be on your screen. It will prompt you to actually complete the questionnaire. It doesn't take anything more than 30 minutes. And the more we get more samples, the sample increases, the better and the more robust our data can be. So out of that, we had 19 indicators. Targets achieved were 11. Targets not achieved were 8. See, what we do is we sort of break down around which performance indicators did we not meet the targets with the variances. And I can say that I will not repeat what I said, but it's just an elaboration of the service charter. Honorable members, chairperson will see that when you say minus 25%, it's actually one. It's one particular event that we didn't achieve out of four, and that equates to 25%. And the rest is self-explanatory. I will not waste your time on that. Under Program 2, which is administration, this reports the sector activity, which indicates the number of programs that members have attended. This is around programs that are conducted by UJ, Vets University, where members go for training. There's a schedule that explains what the training is. All of this area, Chairperson, if I were to say, is supported largely by the European Union donor fund that is managed by the legislative sector, which is an office that is in Parliament. And it explains the type of programs and course, which would be diplomas, certificates, and various programs that we offer to members. So that as far as the targets we met, we met all of those in terms of attending. The next is a repetition, but we actually are showing you exactly where the target was missed in terms of compliance to prescripts and regulations, and I will not waste your time on that. I will move on. Provision of services as per the service charter. As explained, that there was an increase in the plenaries, and therefore the volume increased, and there were challenges of performance there. And what we're trying to do is, we don't necessarily want to burden the staff, but we actually want to make sure that where there are areas of concern, we were able to fill the gaps. And it explains how we might. Some of the areas we didn't have human beings actually doing the work. The other point I want to raise is that which I've spoken about, population participating in parliamentary processes. This is an independently administered research which we are also going to be doing this year. The following part shows you the various services, and we've compiled those into a charter, and on that we have sort of indicated our targets. And if we look at the total of overall timeliness, out of 95% of the work that we've done, we've been on time. We're supposed to be at 95, we are at 90.8. And it explains areas that we were weak in, and those are actually indicated in red. Program 4, this is where all the research is being conducted. Which we actually do on an annual basis. The last one there on ICT, it is largely on accessibility, being able to access your email, able to use a computer, that our network has not necessarily collapsed. And we have actually been able to ensure that members do access all the documents that they need on either the website has been up, has been serviced on time. The other part that I want to talk to, because I've spoken with on client research, and I want to talk to talent management index. The human resources division has got variables where we measure talent, and part of it has got to do with the level of recruitment, retention, and of course learning and development. And they then produce a composite talent management index, which in terms of their actual annual targets with 6, and they exceeded that by a positive 3. Program number 5 talks to associated services. The first one is, I think we did report when we were reporting on a quarterly basis. We are planning, which we think we are coming to an end of that. We are planning a space in Parliament where members can actually be almost like a one-stop station. And so members going to Mark's building for support of ICT, going to the lounge for transaction. We are creating on the ground floor of the old assembly space that we call a seamless space. So out of the milestones, we've achieved 6. The 7th milestone is the physical space. I can say safely and proudly that we know that by January, we shall have a bigger lounge, which will provide members with integrated services, whether you need a library, a book, whether you need a copy of some minutes. You don't have to be going all over the place. And we're hoping that we will provide you with an integrated service, even where you have to submit your claims. This is quite a milestone because it's never been in Parliament, and it will reduce the traversing various buildings to try and find services. And there's nothing much more there. There's a lot of green. Coming to financials, I have spoken on that slide, which shows the fact that we have been able to gravitate from an unqualified audit to a clean audit for the 4th time. And what we're saying there is explaining some of the things we've had to do. And I must say, Honourable Members, Chair, that it's quite a challenge once you have achieved a clean audit. It's quite a challenge to sustain it. And I really would like to say kudos to managers who really made sure that we coordinate our information properly. We do our best to record our work. We do our best to align our achievements against targets. We also do our best to have good indicators. What we're hoping for 18-19 is the fifth parliament will actually end with a historical clean audit right across. And I must say, across the legislature, I think there's only three of us who've maintained the clean audit up to today. Coming to budgets and unaction amounts, what we're showing there is variances, whether under expenditure and over expenditure. In total, I'm going to go to the totals. The final budget that was afforded us was $2.2 billion. The actual amount we spent was $2.23 billion, and variances say $4 million. And that largely was some invoices and payments that fell into the next year. So our variance was 1.5%, which is generally acceptable. You will see that there are certain areas where we overspent. For instance, compensation of employees, what was allocated was 785.5, and the actual amount is 829.7. We had to use some of the resources that we still have in retained funds, which are definitely depleting. And then, of course, compensation of members, it's always under. What we actually spend is always under, and that amount is always sent back to the National Revenue Fund. We have nothing, we can't do much about it. And then I do want to talk to the 507, which looks
sorry,
like...
even before we open for questions, I thought you would elaborate as to why you ended up overspending.
Yes, Chair, thanks for that. The reason we overspend is precisely that over an MTF from 2016 to current, our compensation budget was cut by National Treasury. First, it was $33 million. Second year, it was $108 million. And those cuts almost made us, we actually are still in a deficit with respect to compensation. So when there was a general 1% cut across all departments, National Treasury just cut where they thought there were extra human warm bodies. What they looked for was looked at the number of 1,400 employees that included vacant positions, and they realized that on the table we had about 1,002 or 1,003. They didn't negotiate with us, they just cut. So there's been a reduction, and I think the slide we've shared with the committee many a times, yes. And it shows that actually we're running, and CFO can correct me, that we've been running at a deficit of $347 million, the bulk of which comes from compensation. So what we've been doing is trying to use our retained funds, because we don't retain it to National Treasury, to sustain salaries, which is quite a big risk, because a salary has to be perpetual. And then, of course, in addition to that, we had to use that chairperson. So can I move? The next page does give explanations on the notes. We're talking about the budget compensation has always been less. We explain that. We have always used our retained funds. And then with compensation of members, it's always been overstated. And this is a budget that, in terms of our FMPPLA Act, Section 23.4, we have said, because this is not appropriated, appropriated, it's a direct charge. So that amount of money goes back to National Treasury if we don't use it. It's always been that it was given for in case of loss of gratuity, and given the fact that there's going to be elections, we're going to experience the same thing. When there's loss of gratuity, office gratuity, there is a budget that's given to us for members who are not going to come back. And then, of course, naturally, that amount has to drop. We are thinking that, unlike in the other years, what National Treasury did from 1819, they sort of cut down the amount that we're retaining by $95 million and put it into compensation. And we hope that with time, they'll keep on reducing the amount of money that we retain and then moving it onto the items that we are actually bleeding. We do have conversations with National Treasury on that. And then the other ones are the notes, Chairperson. I don't want to waste your time on that. It's the narrative that talks to the expenditure percentage variances. I can quickly just say the one that stands out is that negative 507. But we explained that in that financial year, Parliament purchased office furniture, and then the shortfall had been funded from the unspent fund of the previous years. So that's a straightforward. And then, of course, 100%, there was no budget allocated to purchase intangibles. The next part of the presentation talks to the budget that we always carry. We've always said what distorts Parliament's budget is precisely that we carry 1.2 billion, which is due to the post-medical aid provision made for former members of Parliament and provincial legislature. Members of committee has always said, why are we not moving this budget from our baseline? I must say that Treasury have again come back to say they are not going to create any vehicle. We will have to decide how we want to treat it because it is still distorting our baseline. So what we're showing you there is the amount of money or budget that we're carrying that has got nothing to do with our business. Of course, a lot to do with the fact that we have to carry it for the legislature, former parliamentarians, and also former members of parliament, of cabinet. It's an area where, when we were discussing with colleagues in the FMO, we were even thinking maybe we could be, Parliament can be radical and say we take this budget and disperse it and get every legislature to carry its own. Or to the extreme would be to open another program under our E&E chapter that just carries this medical aid. We don't know what will be best, but we must say that the post-retirement medical aid causes a continuous liability against the Parliament, and it distorts our budget. Currently, we have something like 961 former members who receive subsidies at the end of the financial year. So it sits in our baseline. The following sections are really your financial position and the statement thereof. What I want to flag here is inventories that have increased by 39%, and this is about our self-generating fund. If you see, 2017 was 635, and then we're sitting at 885. This is our attempt to try and generate income by charging departments that are invited to committees and selling from our restaurants. And then, of course, the one other area maybe which I want to indicate is receivables, which have decreased by 28%. What it means here is there's been less and less staff debt, moving from 2.3 to 1.6. So that's a positive indicator. Receivables from exchange transaction, there isn't a significant shift from 3.2 to 3.2 million. Then the next is not significant either. It's VAT that comes and goes. In output and input, the same. And prepayments, this is the regular payment that we do to DIRCO during the travel of members where we use the lounges and we have to pay DIRCO. And it may well be that members will note that in 2017 we're sitting at 7.5 million, we're sitting at 14 million, meaning that it also reflects the travel that members have been carrying out in this year. And then assets held for sale. What we've done here, there's just very minimal. It is about the value of the car that we had. Cash and cash equivalents, that's decreased due to budget shortfall. And then, of course, this amount includes the EU money that we have in the bank. The next point is an indication that we're sweating our assets. We have purchased less compared to 2017. What it possibly means is some of the staff are sitting with computers and assets that actually have to be discarded. However, as long as we're still using them and they're usable, we use them. And then, of course, the intangibles, talk to the less purchase of intangible assets. There hasn't been any purchases of intangible assets. heritage assets, there's no significance, sitting at 55 million. A few more slides, I'll finish. Finance lease obligations, the increase of 20% finance lease obligations compared with the last one mean that contracts of staff who are off-site have increased. They recover things like cell phones, tablets for staff and managers who actually work off-site from Parliament. And then, of course, the transactions that we have payable from exchange transactions has increased by 6%, not too much, but what is important here is on average our payments, if we take all that we owe, we pay out within 15 days. We might have one or two payments that exceed 30 days, but these are when we have queries. But largely, our average payment days, our daily payments is about 15 days of receipt from the receipt, the invoice receipt date. The one area which has increased is our support to members with living with disability. We've had requests from various political parties to indeed to support members who have disabilities that need support. And that area was quite low in 2017 and it's gone up. But obviously that's for to service members. Unspent statutory appropriation, this is the one that we send back to National Treasury, as I've indicated. And then, of course, we have current employee benefits. This amount indicates performance bonus provision, meaning if we were to pay performance bonuses, this is how much we would have spent. It doesn't mean that we have paid bonuses. And I want to reiterate co-chairs and members of Parliament, because there was an article that was saying senior managers of Parliament have paid themselves bonuses. It is inaccurate. It is incorrect. Those are provisions that you have to indicate and declare in draft to say if you were to pay Baby Jawa a bonus, this is how much it would be. And we've had to correct that. Then the last one, last one is provision on all legal cases, which is sitting at 3.3. The indication is that there has been an increase on litigation in Parliament, and we are aware that Parliament speakers, chairperson are taken to court on various matters. I have spoken on the post-retirement medical aid, and that talks to the employee benefit obligation. And I will not actually repeat that because it talks to exactly the 1.2 billion that I was talking about, which has gone to 1.4 billion earlier on in the presentation. I want to move now to one of the things that we are happy with is contingent liabilities. We had a sub-litigation of 48.4 million. This was largely the bulk of the 38 million, which was a case brought against us, Parliament, by our employees, researcher, which went to the Labour Court, and the Labour Court found in favour of Parliament. Hence, you have that litigation reducing in 2017 to 5 million. 5 million? Yes. And then, of course, other litigation there, there's a slight increase if you look at 2016-17 to 2017-18 from 9.5 to 12.2. And these are obviously various cases against Parliament from various parties which have increased, however slightly. But these are areas that we don't have control of. And so yes, this is about all pending cases against Parliament. Irregular expenditure. I must say we monitor irregular and fruitless expenditure. In terms of the FMPPLA, the accounting officer has to set up a committee under Section 4 of the regulations. We've set a governance administration committee. What that committee does is we pick up any irregular and fruitless expenditure. We request the division manager to come and present, not we, the committee does, independent of us and independent of the finance office. They come and present the reasons why there is an irregular expenditure. We then, according to the law and the act, have to present it to the executive authority, motivate for condonation or motivate for a process, whether it be a disciplinary process, wherein the manager is held accountable. So we have several of those cases. at the time of reporting, we must say that that area reduced by 86%. If we look at 2017, there were cases worth of 2.4, and that has reduced to 336. Of course, 2.4 was condoned by the executive authority. A lot of it come from, for instance, when committees may be on oversight and through booking certain accommodation, members arrive and they raise concern about the state of that accommodation. And we find that we have actually paid and somehow we may lose 40% of what we paid to relocate members to a better place. Some of it goes through chairpersons when a committee decides and gets us to facilitate payment on, let me just say a Friday, co-chairs, because I don't know, for whatever reason, these requests seem to come on a Friday where there's haste and it's urgent, and we have to sign off, and we then end up with a more expensive route or ticket, and these things build up on here. Some of it has got to do, we have a whole report on it, co-chairs. Some of it has got to do with scope creeping when we're doing projects, and in this case it would be particularly electronic equipment, wherein the dollar rand exchange, the dollar gets strong, and then we've actually have to pay more than what we had approved. So they're quite fundamental things. It doesn't mean people are eating the money, not at all. But we must say that fruitless and wasteful expenditure has decreased by 75% from year to year. And also because we have a mechanism of trying to encourage our members and our staff not to do unnecessary transactions without getting three quotations, and also giving motivation if you go through a sole supplier. And that's, for us, that's an area we continue to monitor, Chair. To conclude, as far as the report shows, we have shown a steady increase in improving our institutional performance. We are now discussing a manner in which we will be able to put together a composite index that says, if we are sitting at 57.8 or 58.9 of performance in 17-18, we then take that as a level at which Parliament has to perform, and meaning that the institution has performed, at least now is sitting at 58%, we use that as a base to only improve from there. So, because we've never agreed when we do strategy to say what we mean by good performance. But we're sitting with our strategy unit to say we need to set up a particular target that Parliament should perform at this level for us to say we have actually performed excellently. We will continue to improve ways of efficiency and initiatives and innovation to really also reduce our costs of doing business. And then, of course, we continue to fill in critical positions. However, we're quite alive to the fact that we do not want to burden the institution with too many warm bodies in case cabinet shrinks. We will also have to reconfigure how we support members, because there's been an indication. As a result, the Speaker and the Chair have said we must work with our colleagues in the executive to just hear what is the intention and how that will impact on us. So we are alive to that change. However, we are equally alive to the fact that for members to succeed, you do need good researchers, you need content advisors, and we are equally alive to the fact that NCOP, because it has got its select committee, it is problematic to actually have one researcher who has got one research, capability. So we will have to reconfigure the whole area of research and content advisors, and we're doing that through our re-engineering processes. The last thing is we once again remind the committee of the need to use the budget vote to ensure that, first, Treasury doesn't just cut our budget without consulting us, and also to fight the space with the executive authority, because I know that in the last two meetings, chair, co-chairs, you did commit that once we give you the submissions on our budget adjustments, you will have a meeting with the executive authority to try and work with them. We're aware that the country is going through a financial strain, very aware. However, what we want to argue and would like to the chairperson to really consider having a discussion with the executive authority on how these constraints and the fiscal is going to impact on the work of Parliament, because the less Parliament has budget to exercise oversight effectively, the more budget or the more money will be wasted if there's no monitoring. And we just want to share with the committee what they had resolved, that they will actually work with the executive authority, with Treasury on this matter. I must end up, Chair, co-chair, by saying the executive authority has had a meeting with the former Minister of Finance, Minister Nene, I think the last few weeks before he resigned, and there was a conversation and discussion. And what was committed by National Treasury is we as technocrats must engage and schedule meetings with the technocrats in National Treasury long before they go into the budgeting cycle. So we're due to have another meeting with them by end of November, primarily because we don't have a space where we interface with National Treasury. We just get to be given a letter that shows you the indicative allocation on the MTF without any input. And we've seen that, and we are cultivating a relationship which is really growing. But we hope at a political level that can be influenced by this committee and the executive authority. I wish to end my presentation there. Thanks very much, Honourable Member. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Acting Secretary of Parliament, for that very elaborate presentation. I think it was very, very, very clear. And members should be able to engage with it. And also acknowledging and congratulating you on the clean audit that you have been able to achieve consistently for the past 4 years or so. I think we are setting a good example as Parliament through the departments that we have to oversee. Thank you again. Colleagues, that is the presentation. May I open the floor for engagement with the presentation, and the co-chair here wants to kickstart the discussion. Co-chair? Clean audit, but you are referring here to heritage assets. Do you have an audit of the heritage assets? And if so, do you distinguish between heritage assets which may be offensive and those which may not be? Thank you, Co-Chair. Are there further inputs from the floor? Yeah, I'll start this side. Did you see your hand, Honourable Singh?
Yeah, Chair, I have a number of questions, but I'll just make it three for now, so that other colleagues can ask. But no, thank you for the presentation. But firstly, it's not a question. I just need clarity, Acting Secretary of Parliament, on this compensation of members, where you said, I think, almost 100 million rand is a direct charge and it gets returned. It's in one of your slides here. But then under the narrative, you indicate that something like compensation of employees, I'll tell you which was it, number 22. Firstly, I can't understand why we're over-budgeting, but you give a reason of 2009-2010, that it comes back from that era where a loss of gratuity was added. But then I can't understand the narrative which says the underspending was surrendered to the revenue fund. I would expect the total underspending was surrendered to the revenue fund. But then you go on to say there, that for the 2018-19 financial year, an amount of 95 million has been shifted from direct charges to compensation of employees. Now, how does that happen? You know, if you say you have to return it to NRF, how can you shift money from that to something else? So that's just for understanding that I need now. And then I'll ask my questions. And then also, yeah, for understanding is the permit. We've mentioned this before, where we are paying as national parliament for former members of provincial legislatures and former members of the National Assembly, even prior to 1994, an amount. It's a burden on our budget. But can we at some stage get a breakdown of the legislatures and the members that we are paying for? So it'll give us an idea of how to approach this matter moving forward. So we know, you know, KZN, for example, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I've got some questions here, Chen. The one is going to be on irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And I think you mentioned, now irregular expenditure we know is not necessarily money that is a loss, but it's, you know, you haven't followed legal prescripts. But I'm concerned about the condonations there on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure of $1,053,000,000. That's on your slide 32. And even on the irregular expenditure. We need to know why those amounts were condoned. Was there any investigation carried out by yourselves or the executive authority on who were the responsible officials who committed these transgressions, and whether any action was taken against them to recover the funding from them? I'm asking this question in broad terms on irregular and fruitless and wasteful, because it's well enough to say, yeah, it was written off, but how many cases are being pursued and how much can we recover? Because the law allows us to recover the money. Then, Chair, so that's the one question. Then I'm concerned about this, the resignations.
What is the first one from you?
Sorry?
Did you say?
On resignation. The other was asking for more information. Then on resignations, I'm quite concerned on page 150 of the annual report that the biggest percentage of people leaving our institution here, in fact, it was 59%, I think, page 150 of the annual report, coaches, that 35 number of terminations, which is 59.32% of terminations in that period. I mean, it's alarming that it's so large, resignation. I know people do resign, but when such a large number, 35 out of 60, resign, begins to tell us, I mean, why are people resigning? Some might get better jobs, some might want to leave the area. What is the reason? Is there something else that we need to look into about why these people are resigning? There's another matter which we dealt with at our earlier meeting, but I think I'll leave that to the co-chairs to ask questions on that one, the unfortunate incident that took place recently, and co-chairs could ask exactly what action is being taken from the side of the administration to investigate that particular incident and give us a report on it. But my last question...
I'm sorry, Chair.
Yeah.
Please note it. That is the question. And is... You know, there are things that are not being properly done in the administration and that are put you in this recently. Okay.
So you can follow it up, Chair. I'll leave it to the prerogative of the chairs to take that up, but you know what we're talking about. And then I just want to ask the last one for now is the special investigation on page 145, which you report in your annual report. I know now it was October 2017, but it's almost a year, more than a year. And can you tell us what is happening? You know, 1 year down the line, we haven't concluded this matter. The person that's suspended is receiving a salary. And, you know, what light can you throw? It's unfortunate that none of the members of the executive authority are here. Usually they do attend when these annual reports are presented. But maybe you can throw some light onto that. So I'll just stop there now, Co-Chair. And if there's something not asked that I have listed, then I will ask again. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Allow me to start by thanking you for the presentation. And I must admit that there appears to be a great improvement. However, what I find that is happening is this, that there are areas where there are overspending and there are areas where there are underspending. And for me, that is not acceptable, because obviously you've had a plan, you had a plan on what you're going to spend, you had a budget. So, you know, giving an overall figure of is not good enough. You know, we need to look at each one on its merit as to, because you cannot be just moving money around, because I don't know where you get the money to do that. That's the first thing. The second thing is this. I know we've repeatedly expressed concern about the limited budget or the under treasury not giving you enough. But I see that you've had about 282 million rand that you did that lying in the bank accounts at the end of the financial year. So I'm not sure if you can actually explain to us what the situation is there. Now, I like what you said about given the situation in the country, and I think globally in terms of the economy. Tell us what you're doing differently in terms of cutting down on costs. Particularly, I'm interested in, we've addressed this issue previously on the money that are issued, provided for our constituency officers, staff, furniture, catering, the outside travel agents that we are using. And I know that you did explain something about international and at short notice and changing, and it's costing millions and millions of rands. How do you intend dealing with this to try and deal with the situation in the country in terms of the economy to try and reduce costs, given the fact that on the other hand you say that, you know, you are financially constrained as a result of the limited budget that you are basically getting? The other thing is this, my colleague has covered the other one, which I think you're going to deal with. Now, the minister has said very clearly that the public service wage bill needs to be dealt with. Now, you have vacancies, and we hear this from all the other departments, that the vacancies cause poor performance. So, on the one hand, we are talking about reducing the budget, the spend on compensation to employees. On the other hand, you have vacancies which you need to fill to ensure that you perform. How are you intending to actually balance that, if you can tell us? But lastly, for now, I would like you to give me, and I don't know whether you're going to give it to me today or at some stage in the future, I'd like to know how much of money was spent in the last month, in the month before, and the month before that. 3 months, in the last 3 months, on international travel, on study tours and everything. That is what I'd like to know. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those questions. May I take the last hand in this round, so that they are able to respond. Honorable Dibia.
Thank you, Chairperson, and appreciation for the presentation. On page 125 of the annual report, looking at fruitless, wasteful, and wasteful expenditure, there's an item called other. It's a very dangerous word in financial statements. 49 something. Other must be clarified. What does it mean? The public audit amendment bill was passed by Parliament, the two houses. And that bill gives the Auditor General more powers to zoom into the matters of irregular, wasteful, fruitless expenditure. And I'm just cautioning the leadership, the administration, there must be zeros. Because that act is going to kick in. And we're doing this with all departments that appear before us as finance and appropriations. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for those questions. Yeah, I wanted to to give them an opportunity to respond to the questions because I thought there are too many. And then I will come back and give your members another opportunity to pose questions. But the co-chair is insisting. Let me.
Now, I say, Honorable Singh, put a question and leave it hanging and say they usually come. But apparently he wants to say this time they have not come because we need to know who are we holding account to. Is there a position that your principals must be present at certain meetings and not at others? What is the situation? In this case, have they apologized just to know who are we dealing with? Only the officials or the heads, your principal as well.
Okay. Over to you, Acting Secretary.
Thank you very much, honourable members, for the questions. I'll start with the one, Dr. Mtsaga. You know, the executive authority would only be invited, otherwise we are the ones who come make presentations on our work. But the committee does invite them, and sometimes it's in committee or whichever method. And I want to also relate to the issue of the tragic passing on of Mr. Kahani. What the executive authority has done is they have actually visited the family and in fact committed that they will set up a process to actually establish issues that related to that incident. And that's a commitment they have made. I would even suggest that maybe they will have to write to the committee and brief yourself on what is the status of that process. And then I will deal also with the executive authority with respect to secretary's DC case. Indeed, what they normally do is they normally write to yourself and present the status of the case, which is still ongoing. And we will ask for both of those matters to be communicated to the committee directly. Let me go to the other things, parts will be definitely dealt with by my colleagues, honourable members. They are here definitely for that. I will just deal with the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We do have a process, honourable members, and we do indeed investigate through the Governance and Accountability Committee, wherein we issue, depending on the seriousness of how the manager has been negligent or directly responsible, we actually have a report and we can share with yourselves that explains the type of action we've taken against any for those managers who were reckless. However, there are cases where a lot of the matters where when we did take empowerment to the people, let me give this classical example, the venue was changed. And when the venue was changed, furniture was moved from one area to the area where the venue had been changed. And that cost us some money. That was definitely fruitless because we had to get another service provider to provide the service that we had procured earlier on. So some of it will be completely outside the control of ourselves and also control of the principal. And we do actually provide real detail on such reports. The one that is on page 125, there was a production of flags that had incorrect a message in one of the State of Nation address one February last year, which we had to replace because we needed that. So for each of the cases, we definitely have investigated and established the veracity and then make recommendations. The executive authority has also indicated that next, they don't want to be signing off because there is levels of signing off. They don't just sign off. They definitely want us to provide information and evidence of what we're doing about it. I am saying that, honourable members, because when we looked at the extent to which these have been reduced, we want to contain it as it is lower so that it really is when we don't have complete control over that. What are we doing with cutting costs? We have automated a lot of processes in Parliament. The biggest consumption were the printers that we had all over the Parliament. We've reduced the number of printers that we actually are using. We have put together shared printers wherein people have got codes and of finger or the biometric, so that we reduce that, because there was quite a lot of volume of printing and wastage. That's one area we have. One of the things we're also reducing is that of catering, because we realize that there's quite a lot of wastage. To do that, we've actually installed point of sale, so we're able to monitor food, that's the products that are going through out of our doors into our doors. The one area where we still have problems, and that relates to assets. We lose quite a lot of assets, primarily because of the poor scanners that we don't even have in our entrances, a matter that we're fighting over public works about. And that also would assist. The wage bill. I think with the wage bill, we definitely understand. However, we have realized that in Parliament delivers through people. And we try to not exceed the... We can never have the 30% versus 70% as in the private sector. We will always have to have committees that have a committee secretary, has a researcher, has a content advisor, has a legal advisor. And not all committees have got legal advisors, because the work of Parliament is driven, at least by human beings. So our salary, our wage bill is always going to look big. However, if we compare it with the goods and services, it actually explains. And I think earlier on we did indicate that that's why National Treasury made an error and cut our compensation, because they just looked at the fact that there's too many people here, not even us, cut it down. We had to reprioritize and identify critical skills and start employing. Then they gave us the 95 million. I think there was a question from the Honourable King. They are the ones who, when we returned the unused direct charge, they are the ones who moved that from by reducing just what we have returned and then adding it into compensation. That did nothing about our baseline. It was just making up out of the 343 million they had cut from compensation. So we still have a compensation deficit, minus 95 million. I'm going to ask our CFO to deal with the other matters. CFO.
Thanks, honorable members and co-chairpersons. I thought maybe let me first talk to the question of over-budgeting on direct charges, even though the King Secretary actually talked to it, mainly because we keep on referring to 2009. And the relevance of 2009 is because that marked the beginning of the fourth parliament, meaning most of the members who did not return were paid loss of office gratuity at that stage. Then what happened from there going forward? How our budget was allocated, it was only incremental of the actual. As if members will be exiting Parliament in the same magnitude every year, which was not necessarily the case, because we know that happens only after every 5 years. And that then explains the reason why every year in, year out, we have been returning 62 million the first year, 93 million the second year, and then 102 million consecutively. And it is for those reasons that we then said to Treasury, we will continue returning this money until the end of this fifth parliament. Then when we will then be able to know how many members are not going to come back, then we'll be paying that exit gratuity again, because it is an event that happens every 5 years. So with the deliberations and the engagements we had with Treasury, they then realized that, in fact, it is a fact that this is direct charges that we have got no control over. We cannot allocate it anywhere. And in terms of the Act, we have to return it. And only that is appropriated is what we can retain. And that is then why they then agreed to say, from their own systems, we don't know what exactly the process they follow. But it is from there that they decided to then reduce the direct charges or the members' remuneration for this year that we are going to. Actually, for the 18-19, this year that we are currently spending. And then they then increased our compensation. That is why she's saying there was no movement on the baseline. But what will then happen end of this year, 31st March 2019, we will not return anything to National Treasury resulting from unspent direct charges. It is mainly for those reasons. Now that we have to pay back that money or to return it to Treasury, it will form part of what Honorable Sheikh Imam asked. Why then are you left with 282 in your bank account? By 31st March, we haven't paid that money to Treasury. So it was part of that which we have provided for as a liability that has to be paid to Treasury. So that means that 100 million is going to come from that bank account. So when you look at 282, already that tells you there is 100 million that is not yours. You cannot touch. So you can just as well remove the 100 million from the 282. Then we also have got within that cash and cash equivalent or bank balance, you also have the EU funds that when they are not spent, you cannot use. That then it's part of those of that balance. And we also can also provide, during March, there are trips that we've taken, international trips that we will provide the detail that Honorable Sheikh Imam has asked for. But the invoices for those trips will not necessarily have been given to Parliament in March. Will come after March, which therefore means you need to also provide for those in part of the balance. So that talks to that one. And there's also an issue with regards to permit. What we can do on that, Honorable Members, is to provide a list in terms of the legislators and the 961 former members that we have actually referred to, and then which legislatures did they exit from. And I think there's also was a question on heritage, which I think...
There was a question from Dr. Msaka on heritage. Yes, we do have an audit of heritage and all the artwork we have. The bulk of the artwork we have is indeed from apartheid era, massive statues that are still here. Initially, what I know is some part of it were moved to PAL, but we still have some downstairs and we have some on the. But offensive, I'm not sure, Dr. Msaka, we don't have any art that is offensive at all. And whichever when we commission art, we also exchange with UWC, or some of it we get loans from various agencies. And our heritage assets are sitting on the asset books of Parliament, if that is what Dr. Nsa was asking about.
Okay. I don't know why Honorable Singh is deferring questions to us and says we will deal with them, but let me deal with it, because he has done so. What happened, the incident that happened, I think must be characterized as a tragedy. And therefore, I don't think that it suffices just to say that the executive authority has set up a process. What is the nature of that process? Because as MPs, we were also informed about this. And the co-chairperson did not circulate the information that we had amongst the members, and we did not intercede with the executive authority. And the question is, if there is a process, who is the competent person to drive that process? How independent is that process? Because I think that we owe the family in South Africa an explanation of what happened.
Chair, can I just expand on that?
Okay.
Sure. I'm really not satisfied with the answer that we got, that the matter is with the executive authority. Because the first port of call, the first port of responsibility lies with the administration to investigate this matter. And then the political office bearers can do whatever they want afterwards, like ourselves. So I'm really quite unhappy that we are not hearing that there's an investigation, internal investigation, administrative investigation. And that is why I asked the question about resignations as well. Is there something that we don't know? Why did so many people resign? Are there other people that may be, quote-unquote, depressed, unhappy with working conditions here that would require us to investigate or call for further investigation into the administration of Parliament? I think take us into your confidence. If you don't want to do it now publicly, but at some stage, I think we have to be taken into confidence of exactly what's the state of play with administration in Parliament. Thank you, Charles.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, he's not. Isn't it? Yeah. Just the last follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. You know, I'm very disappointed, I must be honest. You are Parliament. You're responsible. On your premises this has happened, and you've taken it nowhere. Just left it in hanging. Now, it answers the first question, that this deceased, Sugarana, had done everything written to so many different people, and not a single one in actually did something about it. So you're doing nothing. Actually, in other words, if we did not bring this up, nothing is going to happen. But I just want to remind us that we also discussed this earlier on, where there's an audit report, which is we are requesting, which we need to get as well. Initially, there was an audit report, which tells us a hell of a lot more. But the problem seems to be bigger at Parliament, and I think, Chairs, I think there must come a stage where we need to have a meeting with Parliament only on this matter, even if it's closed, like my colleague said. But there's a whole lot more, I think, that we need to uncover that is going on. But I want to emphasize that this death was a protest, and let's treat it accordingly. Let's give it due respect, and let's treat it the way it's supposed to have been treated.
Response to this follow-up question?
I'm not going to respond directly, primarily because I think it's important that the committee gets a report on exactly what the executive authority committed themselves to, because indeed it was a question of administration can investigate itself, and that you are owed a report, Dr. Mzala, by them.
Yeah, I think I'll come back to this matter as we wrap up the meeting later. May I give opportunity to other colleagues to post questions? Honorable Isaac?
Chairperson, yeah, thank you for the opportunity. No worries. Yeah. Chairperson, thanks. Yeah, lots has been said, lots has been covered. I had a few similar questions, but I'm not going to just duplicate what has been spoken about. The issue of litigation was raised. We're still waiting to hear, just to follow up on the issue of the one-year scenario regarding Mr. Ngidlana's case. I just wanted to get some concrete feedback because I don't know where we are.
Come back to that one as well.
Okay. Oh, will you? Okay, cool. Chairperson, then the other one I just want to raise, you know, regarding the funding of these critical posts. Now, for the last 1 year, every time we have a meeting and engage, this issue of funding and the issue of the critical posts keeps on coming up and seems to be a problematic scenario. Now, with due respect, and I say this with due respect, but in my day-to-day workings here in Parliament, I mean, I walk around, I meet people, I go into the corridors, I go into the various offices, engage with various people. And I say this with due respect, but one gets the impression that there are certain individuals in different departments that seem to pull their weight and really work hard and deliver the goods. Then the other impression one gets is that you know, others are just here clocking in and just taking a good ride, you know, if you can understand what I'm saying. But my worry is I don't hear much about performance assessments. But we still need to fill critical posts. And we discussed it earlier this afternoon, you recall, Chairperson, where the worry is that this Parliament basically has about 2.5 months left in the fifth Parliament. We have the month of November, I raised it, and we have the month of half a month in February and maybe a month in March. So we basically have 2.5 months left in this fifth Parliament. Now the question arises, is we need to fill all these critical posts, sure thing, But from a funding point of view and the budget constraints that we are going through as a the country as a whole, what is the scenario in terms of the performance assessments before we just go into hiring people and being, at the end of the day, if some ministries are cut or something, and then you're sitting with this big, huge bill to service, and you got all these people. So I wanted to just raise that issue. And then Honorable De Beer referred to the one on other, which he was smart enough to cover. And then I think I'll stop there for now in case something else comes up. I have something on the report, but I think I'll give my other colleague a chance before I allude to... if I might just be, while I'm on you, on the report, Chairperson, with your indulgence, page 120 on the report, it says there at the bottom, I think it's accrued contribution liability. And then it goes on to say continuation of membership at cessation of service-based assumptions. It's a bit of a difficult one if you're not a chartered accountant to digest that one. Continuation of membership at cessation of service-based assumptions, minus 3%. Perhaps you just want to touch on that and educate me. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Isaac. Honorable Coleman.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thanks for the presentation, Acting Secretary. Just want to add my voice in congratulating you on a clean audit outcome, but also note that the quality financial statement is said to have regressed, and also irregular expenditure is said to have increased. I just wanted to alert you to that effect, just to say I can hear when the Secretary, Acting Secretary, is reporting that this is work in progress, and we'd want to appreciate that. As usual, I'm really concerned about the strengthening of the core of parliamentary work, which is the committee section. I'm really not happy. You know, when I came here, I was from the legislature, and I'm sure that many of us coming from legislatures would attest that legislatures perform much, much better than the National Assembly. And my expectations were that I would find the Parliament, both the chambers, performing optimally, actually even much better than legislature, provincial legislature. Placement for support, support of committees. Committees are supposed to help Parliament to do its work. It's still a challenge. You know, we may be construed to be really overemphasizing issues, whereas these are real serious issues that confront committees on a daily basis, and this frustrates. You might be seeing other people, you know, later and thinking that they're really not doing anything, but it's because of frustration sometimes. You know, in some committees there's over, you know, placement of staff. In some committees they're under placement. As I speak, there are committees without researchers. There are committees with more than two researchers, which is, to me, I find it very difficult to understand. There are committees that operated without content advisors, but you expect to get a very good report at the end of the day. Where are we going to get such a report? Those are things that, you know, are making up the work of Parliament, but unfortunately that work is not there. Thirdly, I'm coming to the issue of catering that you alluded to earlier on. Of course, catering has to be expensive if you are going to consider the platters, which are really not doing a favor to our health. South Africa has staple food, for instance, from every... yes, every group, racial grouping. You'll find that you have, with us, pap and what, or rice and what. There's common food that we all enjoy. We all eat biryani, we all eat that. But at least you find something in it. You know, this is fat, it's deep fried, it's all that, making members unhealthy. And you can't function optimally if you really, after eating this, you're feeling sleepy, you're feeling, it's not right. And we continue to say to committees must continue eating such food, which is not correct. I think this needs to be looked into, maybe in the sixth parliament or whatever, but really something that needs to be. Members come here, including myself, came here very nicely shaped, but look at me now. It's not right. We
do
try to do
good.
Yourself, yes. We're not the same. You know, genetically not the same. So you can't compare me to yourself. So those are the issues that we're confronted with, that we need to really deal with. I decided to deal with those issues because I know that we normally go to high-level issues, whereas there are these minute issues that really we're not dealing with. In terms of the litigation, I'm told that the researchers, I don't know, is the one that we alluding to earlier on, researchers that they were not paid. I don't know what type of what payment they were not paid, and they won the case apparently, and they were supposed to be compensated, and they are still not compensated. When are they going to be compensated? Is that money budgeted for? If not, how are they going to? Otherwise, you'll want them to go back to court, which is going to cost us more money again. I think those are the things that we need perhaps to be dealing with. Acting Secretary, yes, issues of printers, toners, I think this talks to planning. Because it also says, I know that my secretary doesn't have a printer now. Long, it's not working. There's no pool printers. Each time I have to print something, she has to loiter around, you know, Parliament to get a printer. She was told that she must wait for the next financial year where we're going to buy a printer. In the meantime, we're going to be suffering. This is my case, but this is what is happening generally. And I'm saying these are small things, but very, very integral to the work of our committee. I have issues that I thought I've noted here that members have raised, some members have raised. I was also worried about the level of employees that are leaving the institution, the high rate of employees that are leaving the institution. Some will stay for 4 months or so that they leave. What is the cost? Perhaps we need also to be briefed about that, because that would begin to tell us what exactly is happening. I had noted other things here, but I thought, especially around this report, but I'm thinking that I should leave that, because most of the issues that I thought I would deal with were covered, even though they were approached from a different level. But I think it will suffice if I get the responses to some of the questions already.
We'll deal with that question. We have a leader of government business that suggests that there should be coordination between Parliament and the executive. now where the weekend papers say that there is dumping of bills on Parliament, which would mean if there's dumping of bills, if you don't have a say looking at the Parliament program to say you can't dump these bills because our program would not allow us to deal with these bills, because if bills are dumped here and there's not enough time, it means the quality of the legislation that will be done with hurriedly is going to leave much to be desired, and this bill must go to NCOP. Will NCOP have time to deal with such bills? Will there be enough time to do public hearings? So I think this issue. And also, the report says that there are lots of bills that are returned by the Constitutional Court, which would suggest that this Parliament produces legislation which is not up to scratch, most probably because of this dumping. So what are you doing to ensure that the executive, we are not, Parliament is not a rubber stamp of bills from the legislature. So when bills are coming here, there must be coordination to ensure that the program of Parliament can accommodate all those bills.
Thanks, Court Chair. Honourable Paulson?
Can I make a suggestion? You've given three inputs and
You're the co-chair, you've given three inputs. You wait till everyone is done and then, you know,
yeah,
as a chairperson, you can wrap up instead of
interjecting. Your point is noted. Please, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much for the presentation, ma'am. On slide 5, you give us the reach of the social media and also the television broadcast for different channels that you focus on, and we are a population of 51 million people, and possibly 15 million of those people voted us, participated in elections, and that is the extent of our reach. So what does it cost for us to maintain those channels? What does it cost for us to broadcast on the DSTV channel compared to the amount of people we are reaching, which is not even a critical mass of our voters? Okay? Because it's all nice to do those things, but are we a nation that's really, you know, ready to have an uptake of the social media to actually follow what we do here in Parliament? What we should we do to actually make sure that people reach Parliament or watch what what happens here in Parliament? And then also on slide 10, you've got a list of strategic objectives which has been assessing your performance and who determines those strategic objectives for Parliament. You know, then there were two, slide 14, you spoke about staff issues, and slide 17 you speak about talent management, and I welcome the inquiry into Mr. Kahani's death, but or the circumstances around that unfortunate incident, and I'd like to know who will be doing that inquiry. You know, certainly it cannot be someone from within Parliament, because I think
that one has been touched, as I indicated. We'll come back to it. No?
All right.
Yeah.
So I want to speak about the talent management and people that we've lost under the leadership of the former Secretary of Parliament, and very good people who had very long, some of them had very long service with Parliament, but because of
their unhappiness with the former Secretary of Parliament and them being dismissed. So we've lost a lot of good people under his leadership, you know, and this is part of those people that have taken us for litigation and to CCMA. You know, what have we done to address that particular issue? I think it's tragic that because of his leadership, we've lost very good people. We've now have a new acting secretary under yourself and possibly be the permanent Secretary of Parliament. What are we doing to correct that error that is Mr. Gitlana? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Sure. Thanks, Honorable Paulson. Yeah. But just remember, as we engage with these issues, that some of the matters are still pending, and we need to be circumspect in terms of how we want to deal with them. And I think I'll come back to some of these as well, you know, but I thought I should just make that point. Honorable Masondo?
No, thank you very much, Chairperson, Co-Chairs. Firstly, just to say that I wish to add my voice to those who are welcoming the report. I think that this is working the right kind of direction. There's appreciation there. And then make the following comments. There's a part of the report that deals with the inquiries instituted, SABC, social development, political party funding type interventions and so on. Just to say here, maybe excluding the political party funding, just to say here that it may be very useful when we articulate this issue. I don't know if it's too late, but when we do articulate on this matter, to ensure that there's a balance between anticipating what the Zondo Commission is going to emerge with finally, and they're saying very little, because when the report comes out finally, people will page back on what work did Parliament do, what did Parliament do, and so on. So I'm just saying that this is an important matter that may need a little bit of elaboration without being too much elaborate, as it were. The second issue is the question of social media. Social media and communication really sometimes become a mystery. there's a gap between what has been done and is being done, and what could be achieved. I think that little bit is missing, and we need to find a way of articulating that. The third point is on customer satisfaction survey. I would have liked to have just have a comment on the sample size and just how scientific and useful that the survey is in general. The last point is on the Mkhitlana case. I know that we're coming back to it, Chair. At some point, I mean, this matter has been going on for some time now. At some point, it was said that the issue will be concluded around September. We are now almost in December and end of the year. If there are difficulties in now this matter is being processed and so on, I think it would be very useful to say so upfront, trying to wait for years and years. Because the issue is going to come back to Parliament or to administration and management. And it may look very bad. These matters of this kind, I know that people sometimes are very prejudiced. They take a position, they decide this is how this matter is, this is how it should be dealt with, and so on. A lot of emotions and so on. We need to be a bit more rational and be very sober. And if there are difficulties, point this out, as I've seen, up front.
Chair, thank you very much. Yeah, I think there was a question that was posed at the beginning of the discussion, especially by Honorable Singh, and I think it has been repeated by about two or three colleagues. The issues around resignation of staff members, I don't think you spoke to it. But also, members, with regards to the issue of irregular or fruitless expenditure, in your pack, there's a letter, I think, addressed to us, sort of explaining the whole matter, what happened, what steps were taken to make sure that corrective action is taken and all those related matters. So if you could please just go back to that, you know. To sort of respond to some of the issues that the members have actually raised. But for sure, the acting secretary to Parliament may want to elaborate further. And yes, also, if I may add one or two questions from my side. In your presentation, you referred to aiding bills having been passed by Parliament and assented to by the President. I thought you will also indicate those that we have passed, but not necessarily ascended, you know, because that is the part that concerns our performance the most, you know. And then the other one is with regards to public participation, where there is an indication that I think the target was to get 10% of the population in terms of issues of public participation. Yeah, I think it's not very clear, this 10%. Is 10% of the population really? I mean, the population in South Africa is 50-something million. So I think perhaps there's something that we're going to understand. If you could please explain it. And in terms of the litigation, I think you did indicate that there's been an increase in litigation, I think, against Parliament. Obviously, Parliament is defending majority, if not indeed all of these cases. I want to check the success rate. How many of these cases are we winning as Parliament? Yeah, let me pause there. Over to you.
Sorry, Chair. A couple of my questions, I don't know whether I should be waiting, has not been answered. The first one, it hasn't been answered.
Do you want to summarize them in,
yes, very quickly,
in 30 seconds?
I spoke about the cutting of the cost with the travel and things, and we were here previously where we spoke about, remember that you were going to work on with other flights like Mango and all those things to cut.
Yeah,
why are you using outside sources, outside travel agents? And the other one is the issue of constituency offices, furniture, which you provide the money for, and there's no control, there's monitoring, nothing of it at all, that sort of thing.
Thank you. Over to you.
Thanks very much, Honorable Members. The question was that we should provide a breakdown of international travel, which we will do and submit, because we don't have ready data as we speak. We definitely have that. And then with respect to the constituency offices, normally what we do is we provide the parties with a budget that they use themselves as long as it's audited and sent back to us. The question that Honourable Member is asking is, do we know how it's spent? Is that the question, Honourable Member?
Thank you. The monies that have been allocated for constituency offices, a specific purpose for that, a go-between the public and the public representatives, the members of parliament and things. Do you have a system? I know you don't. Do you have a way you check these, where you monitor these officers exist? Because you're giving a lot of money for these things. Of that money, you're getting audited reports where they bought furniture, where they're paying for staff and everything. Are you monitoring this thing? I have been told you've done it 10, 15 years ago. It was very poor results and you don't do it again.
We don't do it, Honorable Member, if I were to answer directly. We just depend on the audited reports that we get submitted to us. And when there's no satisfaction with that those audits, we withhold the allowance. So what Honorable Member is saying, we should actually be more proactive and do exactly what you're saying we should do. And it's noted, because it is definitely money that they should account for. And we hear you very well. So, let me come to the most important point. I think what we will do, last year we did do it. We provided members a breakdown of vacancies. We provided, and we will do it again, Chairperson, on the turnover of people who are resigning and the results and the reasons why, because we did an analysis of all the exit reports, and we provided you with a percentage of even the retention. In terms of our data, which HR will definitely provide to yourselves, is to show the level of retention in Parliament, that more people actually stay in Parliament. They don't go. Very few people go. The tendency of what the biggest challenge that we have is exactly what we're dealing with. It's the contracts. If you have uneven contracts, which we have in Parliament, some of those are fixed contracts, some of those are renewable contracts. It is a very uneven regimen, which HR is revisiting. For instance, if you have content advisors and you put them on a five-year contract, whilst in fact you will need content advisors, that job will not change. It doesn't make sense to put them on contracts. As a result, we've actually revisited our policies around those matters, and those policies have served with the executive authority. And in line with exactly what Honourable Manshek was saying about sometimes they are overstretched people, sometimes understretched. What HR is doing henceforth is we're going to do a skills audit and matching, because we realize that with time there might have been that from 1994, Parliament might have actually recruited people who had mismatched skills. And a skills audit has to be done. The last time we did a skills audit was, I think, 3 years ago. So we're quite alive to that challenge. What we will do, coaches, in the next report, actually we can send it even before the next meeting, is give you an analysis of all the vacancies, give you an analysis of the exit reports of people who've left. One of the things that does happen in Parliament is some managers have had to resign because of certain pressures, wherein managers come in and want to change the way in which people work, and there's a groundswell of rejection, and some good managers get ejected out of the system, and we should be honest about that. So we've lost serious managers who were skilled, competent, come into the institution, try to set up systems. They are completely ejected, and we've lost some of those, meaning that if you don't work in Parliament for 10 years and 20 years, there's a lot of antagonism when you come in to renew with different approaches to employment. So it's a double bite. So some of them would come to Cape Town, having their homes in other provinces, and in a five-year contract, and in the second year, there's a groundswell of rejection, and they leave. And we will actually provide you with that analysis. And that doesn't bode well for Parliament. So we don't receive new ideas as a result. If we don't, Parliament will never be modernized. And the idea is also that if you're on a five-year contract, colleagues wait for you to finish your contract and go and do nothing. So there's going to be a lot of mind change, a lot of acknowledging that you have to receive new knowledge. And it's what we're doing, which I think we should share with the committee. I think on the 9th, Ravi, on the 9th we have a working session with organized labor, because it's a new committee of organized labor, because what we want is to try and discuss and have a shared vision of what role should organized labor play? And I must say that relationships have thawed a little because we are speaking. Not that we're not fighting. We are talking to one another, and we are acknowledging that there are challenges. And what we've done is we've invited them into a working session to really talk about where do we want to take this parliament as officials of parliament. There was a question on, I still say that there is a wellness section in parliament, and part of what we've been doing is to expand it to ensure that indeed there's a burden of diseases, there's also a burden of stress. What wellness has done is they've pulled together a lot of services from the metropolitan who are managing our group life. And they've provided us with a whole range of services, psychologists, psychiatrists, to really deal with the health of the employees.
After the tragic incident?
Yes. And no, we've had it before. Right. We've always had wellness. Initially, in fact, we even have a clinic downstairs. And we have a doctor once a week. We have a psychologist that comes once a week on the precinct. We've always had that. But it's been intensified. And when the tragic incident happened, we've offered that service continuously and consistently. And it's not anything we undermine at all. The impact thereof we are not undermining. Masibu will have to talk to this piece of paper that he's given to me to disrupt my trend. There's a question about us putting DSTV and only reaching a few people, and it's correct. What the head of PCS is doing is we're trying to move, because our channel is on DSTV, it's not on free-to-air, and we try to move that with an agreement that will help with having either getting our studio from SABC that we're having on precinct, you know, and there's a plan to do that. Unfortunately, we were in partnership with SABC, but SABC is having serious financial constraints. However, what we continue to do is use our social media because we have control thereof. And we do use African language stations, the 11 language stations, when you have messages to mobilize for public participation. With the turnover of employees, we will provide you a breakdown. We'll also provide you a breakdown of to the extent to which you have managed to fill in positions. The last time we came, we were saying there were 132 needed positions. We will provide you an update on that. Speaking to the Zondo Commission and the inquiries we're talking about, we will actually articulate the link thereof. With respect to the sample, we're using two products. We are commissioning Ipsos, and Ipsos uses the census enumerator areas. So the outcome of that data is weighted towards the population. So it is exactly that. There's 3,500 to be sampled, but weighted against the population of adults, that means from 15 years upwards. So the data that we get there, it definitely is representative nationally. They use variables, deep rural areas, peri-urban, townships, and suburbs. And what we do, we piggyback on their survey, which is a Kayaban survey, and then we pay only for questions. So it's about $500,000. We pay for questions that they test on their survey, which is about 50 minutes, and then we use the robustness of our data, and they actually give us the whole data set. So we can play around, do some data mining, produce reports that we want to produce. With respect to the other one, stakeholder satisfaction, it is very segmented. There's various segments internally they would ask questions from members of parliament, level of satisfaction. They will ask questions from it. It's quite targeted, so it cannot be generalized to the population. But that is there's veracity in how they're doing that, and the methodology is definitely it's scientific, and it's a continuous product that we're going to use. And they also use, and that one of client satisfaction, I must say, Chairperson, we have commissioned the Human Science Research Council. And what they also have, they have their own South African Social Research, where they actually assess people's perception on parliament, and we get quite interesting results thereof. We did share the report with members, but I think we will send it again to yourselves. There was a question about researchers. I think in our presentation, when we were talking about the fact that the researchers took Parliament to the Labour Courts, at that time we had budgeted 38 million, and the Labour Court decided in favour of Parliament, so we do not owe anybody anything in respect of that. We don't know what else will prevail.
So you appealed and what?
Yes. The judgment was in favour of Parliament, yes.
Were the researchers informed of the outcome of the appeal?
Yes, ma'am, they were informed. Yes, they were. They are the ones who actually took us to court, so they definitely were informed. Yes, ma'am, they were. The case that is still out there is that of the protection services. There's a case that is out there. I think it's at the Labour Court, but it's not been heard, if I'm not wrong, on the extent to which the job descriptions of the current ones are not the same as those of the chamber ones that we employed later on. That's still an ongoing case. I'm sure Rashida can assist me if I'm missing out on detail there. She's dealing with the litigation issues there. Did I answer all the questions? Oh, yes. Mr. Castle will talk about the bills and also the dumping of the bills, as Dr. Motsego. Mr. Castle?
Thank you, Acting Secretary, and good evening to honorable members. Just on the bills, I don't have information on the number of bills that have not been ascended to at this point. That information can only be made available. But in terms of the dumping of bills, or
those that Parliament has passed, how many?
That it has passed.
The 18 that is referred to in the presentation,
yes,
are bills that Parliament has passed and have been ascended to by the President. So do we have others that are still pending that the President has not as yet ascended to?
Yes, there are. But it's the number that, the exact number that I don't have. For instance, there would have been the issue of, I was asked a few weeks ago about the funding of political parties bill. I understand it has not been ascended to, among others. But I do not have the
exact figures. I think we need that information.
Yes, all right. And then the issue of dumping of, or what is referred to as dumping of bills, the program committee is seized with that matter. There was a list that came from the executive of about 18 bills that the executive was requesting that they be prioritized. 12 of those are already in the system, currently before committees. In fact, some have already been finalized by committees. So the matter is indeed receiving consideration by the program committees.
And when you say finalized by committees, you remember committees of the two houses?
By some committees, yes. By some committees.
Yeah, I'm just saying, just be mindful of that. You know?
Yeah, no. by some committees, Chair. Thank you so much for that. Was there another point I needed to...
is in the public space, it is said bills are dumped on Parliament. And it is said this dumped in court bills must be prioritized, which means committees are expected to hurriedly deal with them, and the consequence will be that poor legislation will be used, and that is going to be a negative reflection on Parliament. So the question was, is there a way that Parliament is ensuring that bills are not dumped on Parliament without taking into account the fact that the program of Parliament would not allow the committees to do justice to the bills that are referred to them by Parliament?
Honourable Co-Chairperson, I would say yes, and in fact Mr. Singh could also assist here, the program committee, the program committees are that mechanism. Members will be aware that there are two parliamentary councillors, the one attached to the president and the other attached to the leader of government business or deputy president. They sit in program committees, and they are engaged by those structures on this issue of the bills and the need not to to dump bills on parliament. So, yes, there is a mechanism. The program committees are dealing with that, and the program committees are chaired by the two presiding officers, the speaker and the chair of the NCOP.
Chair, I realize there's two questions I needed to respond to. Performance assessment. We do have a performance assessment system that we have revisited. And I have to say that from where we come, there has been a lot of improvement. We have at least 85% of people who've contracted or signed performance agreements, at least much sooner than it used to happen before. And on a quarterly basis, managers have to do the assessments of their subordinates. The good thing is we are now automating it. And we've changed it altogether. We're using the balanced scorecard than an ordinary activity-based where people were scoring themselves on the basis of events and activities. So we've had to redo the whole system itself, and it will assist us going forward. It's also why there's evidence that Parliament is actually improving in terms of performance going forward, because now we can cascade. And there was a question about where do we take the strategic objectives from. We take the strategic objectives of the strategy for 5 years of Parliament from the policy priorities that are brought into Parliament by both houses. What we do every year when the term of office or administration starts, the NA puts together a multi-party committee wherein there's a strategy on the majority party manifesto thereof. And there's a workshop that identifies those policy priorities. So according to Chapter 3 of the FMPPLA, the accounting officer has to then take those priorities and conduce them into a five-year strategy which outlines high-level strategic objectives that can be measured annually that then constitutes our APP. And that's also an exercise. Similarly, NCOP does the same, where there's a planning session wherein we derive our strategic objectives from the two houses. Then they combine to form a strategic plan for Parliament, largely driven by the mandate as expressed in the Constitution. Hence, when we're reporting, we reported on oversight, on legislation, on public participation, because those are the pillars in the Constitution that drives the work of Parliament. So it's quite structured. What we're going to do now, we're going to evaluate the extent to which the Fifth Parliament has mapped its strategy that was informed by the policy priorities. And we then have to conduce another framework that will be engaged on by when the new Parliament comes in, new administration of Parliament. So we that's how we get guided. The question around the case and the DC of the Assessor to Parliament, I have to say that the case is ongoing. It is going on. It is now at the point where the side of Parliament will have to close its submissions and evidence, because we have an independent evidence leader, we have an independent chair, and indeed it was delayed, but it's precisely because of the availability of the dates, of the availability of the chair, as well as requests in terms of from the secretary's side. And the chair of the DC wants to be as fair as possible so that Parliament is not found wanting and deprived the secretary of his own legal rights. And that's where it is. And of course, as I said, the report will be given to the chairpersons later on from the executive of them. Oh, yes. And the 10% public participation, chairperson, it's derived from the Ipsos Machina research, as I was explaining. We got three questions. The one question says, are you aware of Parliament? Then, have you participated in Parliament processes? And something like, in touch? I can't remember the third one. Access. Do you have access? And those questions are asked in a questionnaire, as I said, from a sample, randomly sampled sample by, and it's about 3,500 households that are randomly sampled. And out of that, the question is posed to that number that's been sampled, and the 3.5 is weighted against the population. So if you weight it against the population, it's a response that's representative of the views of 35 million South Africans, scientifically. And we have the report. It explains the methodology very clearly. And it's translated into all languages, and they go to all the provinces, and they have variables that talk to income, gender, education level, race, and language. It is fair
that we rely on research institutions, Machino or any other, when we are public representatives with the parliamentary constituency offices all over the country. What is the feedback from the parliamentarians themselves? Because I think that Parliament is giving money to MPs. MPs have a duty to feedback as to the participation of the people.
Honorable Sir?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I know it's an unearthly hour and we've had long days. And just to confirm what Mr. Kaso says, I can tell you the sentiments expressed by Honorable Motseka is sentiments expressed by members of the Programming Committee, and I attend it religiously tomorrow morning, 8:30 again, that we are concerned that the executive is bringing in, they were given deadlines and timelines, but they're bringing in legislation now which they're appealing to Parliament to process. Anyway, we'll try and manage it tomorrow and see how far we take that. But, Chair, on the issue of the staffing, I appreciate the honesty of the Acting Secretary to Parliament in saying to us, yes, there are good people that left here out of possible frustration with the administration that was there at that time or the leadership that was there. And this is why at lunchtime, Chairpersons, I suggested that maybe we need a full inquiry into the administration of Parliament so we don't make the mistakes of the fifth Parliament as we run into the sixth Parliament. But I think that is something that we need to consider as a committee when we next meet. But I think it's very, very important that we don't get rid of these very good people who might have been harassed, who might have been frustrated, and, you know, might have just stopped short of doing what Mr. Khakhane unfortunately did. But my one question, Chair, relates to security in Parliament, and I think we need another meeting for this. I am extremely concerned as a member of Parliament, and so are my colleagues, about the security in Parliament. I mean, yesterday or the day before, there was an unfortunate incident where people come here to give evidence, invited by a committee, get harassed in the way that they were. And I think we need a full report, because we can't allow people like that to come here and do what they did and get away with it. When you as a member, even in the NCOP chair, if you do something out of order, that the chairperson warns you twice and tells you get out of the house. It must apply to members of the public as well. Somebody will carry a firearm and one of us could be injured. Yesterday it could have been fatal, I mean the day before, I think. Could have been fatal. So we need a report on that. But my last question, Chairperson, is our own audit committee, which is attached to Parliament, says on page 143, moving on to 144, the effectiveness of internal controls. And they say, notwithstanding these improvements, the following remaining challenges should be addressed. And I just want to know how you're addressing the challenge of funding. Yes, we all addressing it. We'll help you. But the challenge of key controls over institutional performance management, including frameworks and systems, require management attention to further enhance the quality of reporting. What are you doing about that? It's reported by our own audit committee. And may I also advise, when you draw up your annual report the next time in your index, put the page numbers so it's easy reference. And where is Auditor General report? Put it Auditor General report instead of governance issues. So it helps us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Are there further follow-up questions before we move closer to wrapping up the meeting? I don't see any other hands. Do you want to come and just respond to that?
The The one on the how we managing the internal controls. What we do is we know that the perpetual finding is our ability to collate information and have evidence to support the fact that we've met targets. And that area meant that we were not able to manage, document management was poor. What we have done is we put together what we call an audit task team, which constitutes of people who compile reports in the various divisions, and that are, those are managed by Ravi Modli on a monthly basis so that we don't have this whoa when the audit comes and we run around, we don't have supporting documents. It's improved gradually. We even use the system. We said to colleagues, post your evidence onto what we call Uvimba, that's an electronic system for of documentation management, and we will continue to do that. Yeah. Thanks, Chair. We will provide this today. The speaker also called me in the office, and she asked that we pull together a report of all the incidents that we reported to the police and actually provide her with an extensive report, particularly of people who definitely, because the incident of day before yesterday happened again earlier this year. So we need to pull together that report, working with the police, to get to a point where we are able to give to the political principals so that when it is said that certain people must be barred and actually charged for intimidation, that should be what we would have recommended to the to the executive authority. So we're going to submit a report. And in addition to that, we've been asked to look at all the incidents of destruction of furniture, cases that we report to SAPS, because there's quite a lot of cases that we reported. Some have been investigated on, some not. So we are going to give such a status report. The biggest challenge, honourable members, through you, chairpersons, is our dependency on public works with respect to the search points, wherein we're supposed to be supplied with metal detectors, proper screens. We don't have that budget. It sits with public works. And we have a committee that's got SAPS, public works, and ourselves. And it's an unending discussion each time. To date, we're supposed to have at least 10 stars around Parliament to really have working 10 stars. And it's perpetual. And we have escalated that because we as officials have really done what we could. There is no response that is positive. In fact, from 2016, both the principals set out a whole security physical infrastructure. At that point, public works had budget. It keeps on not being delivered. We have requests that we made. For instance, even the cameras on the precinct. Some have been revamped. I think they revamped about 93 cameras. Some cameras were not turning. So we have details, and we've put together a whole program of physical security on our chair, which has not been dealt with by public works. But we've escalated the problem.
So, as closing the meeting, the co-chairperson wants to say something.
I just want to clarify on the net liability that you spoke of. I know you said the Treasury said they can't deal with that one that is related to the medical aid. I didn't hear the solution to that, so that we can understand the position of the legislature on that.
My colleagues will help me here. We were saying maybe this is a discussion we should now have with the legislature. And we don't have a solution because naturally the National Treasury says find a vehicle to deal with us if you want your baseline to be realistic. So we were saying this afternoon with colleagues, maybe it's important that we start raising it with the speakers and the CEOs of the legislature to say create a vehicle and then we apportion all the budget to yourselves and to your budget so you manage it. Or the alternative would be the whole legislative sector decides on a vehicle. Well, this matter was raised long time ago when DG was still DG Fuzile. He said, you will have to create a vehicle because we can't carry this for you. It will stay with Parliament until we resolve it. So, Honourable Member, I don't think we have a solution as yet. It's just an exploration, unless if the committee can guide us possibly on how best we can deal with this matter.
I'm actually happy with the way you dealt with the question of Gizan, which Honourable Masondo said we must deal with it rationally and soberly, because you were saying that you can't be a judge in your own course. I think for me, that's the rationality that I guess Honourable Masondo refers to. But you see, for the people that we represent, matters don't come to an end because the term of Parliament has come to an end. You know, for instance, we have had structures called parliamentary democracy offices, which consumed a lot of money. And what happened to those, I don't want to answer now. What happened to those offices and the assets of those parliamentary democracy offices? Can you go and find out? Lastly, this parliament had a very important program called Parliamentary Millennium Project. And that project was important because for us to be able to be sitting here, people, families lost their children, their next of kin in Angola, in Zambia, and elsewhere. And others are even saying, we just want the head or spirit of our children to come back. And there was a, in terms of that program, a forum where Cuba, Angola, Namibia, Russia would sit with us. What happened to that important structure? There was even a suggestion that there should be a development project in southern Angola, just to say thank you to the people of Angola for the contribution that they made. Now, I'm saying again, I don't want an answer, but I want to know what's happening to that project, because we speak of liberation work, but we also should be talking about spiritual and liberation roots, because our people want a closure to what happened to their children. We can't be sitting here and then we call ourselves honorable members and our people don't even have an explanation as to what happened. But lastly, as Honorable Masondo said, you know, if there are challenges in saying, how do we deal with the Gideon case, we must say, these are the challenges, so that we can advise. But we can't just keep quiet and just assume that everybody, it is acceptable to everybody that we are dealing with the matter behind the scenes. Thank you.
Co-chair, thank you very much for those points that you have raised. And I want to believe that the points that the chair has just raised are noted, so that as we plan for next year and for the next term, we are able to make sure that if we agree on them, they are factored into our programs, into our plans. So please do make sure that they are noted. I think the second thing that...
Maybe we shouldn't say next year, because now we're going to go to the people, and the people are going to say, you have been there five years. What have you done about our children who are in Angola, who are in Zambia? But I guess this is not the last minute we are meeting. No. Follow up, tell us what happened to this matter.
Okay. I think on that note, we will leave the matter at that, you know. And I wanted to say that I think we have done justice to the report as presented by the acting secretary to Parliament and the meeting notes, the report, obviously with the understanding that management has taken note of the issues that members here have raised, with a view to correcting those that have to be corrected and making sure that necessary improvements indeed are made. We also, earlier on, I think all of us were in unison in congratulating you on the clean audit that you achieved now and in the previous financial year. I think colleagues here at the meeting is keep it up. We have agreed that there are certain issues that have to be taken up with the presiding officers as soon as possible, and I think that meeting will have to be arranged very, very soon, among others, to deal with the pending case or the case that is underway of the Secretary to Parliament, so that we get a full briefing from the presiding officers, because they are best placed to actually talk to us, not necessarily her. Those presiding officers talk to us and brief us, take us fully on board, you know. If there are challenges, make sure that we are agreed on those. But also to discuss with them, the, as we have agreed in the earlier meeting, the tragic case of Mr. Harani, though that is another matter that will have to be put on the agenda. And the other is the issue of Parliament budget, the challenges that are there. We have previously said we are available, we should be able to engage presiding officers and assist each other in approaching the National Treasury and find a solution to the challenges that we have identified. I think the other issue is going to be the issue of security that has just been raised here in Parliament, that we will have to also put on the agenda. I think we have agreed here and also in the previous the earlier meeting that we need a full report on the administration of Parliament. And I believe that meeting that we are going to have with presiding officers is one other issue that we are going to have to flag. I think those are the issues that as we approach that meeting, we need to make sure that they are informed in advance so that they come to that meeting ready. The other issues I think that we have also discussed is that given the fiscal constraints that we are operating under as Parliament, management is required to do everything within their power to make sure that they reduce costs. I think that is the point that was emphasized. And for sure, in our future engagements, we'll get an update as to how far are we. We know already they are doing something about it, but I think the meeting is saying more needs to be done as far as this area is concerned. We are also expecting Acting Secretary to Parliament to also put together an analytical report on resignations, on vacancies, wellness program, you know, so that we have got a full understanding of what is happening, especially with regard to issues of employees here in the institution, so that we avoid what happened recently with Mr. Harani. And I think the issue of the public participation model system was raised. Going forward, we need to make sure that the model that is used must factor the issue of our constituency offices. I think as the co-chair indicated earlier on, we can't just depend on Machino or those other institutions. We need to make sure that our own resource or resources that are available are actually factored into these models, into these systems. Yes, I thought I should just lift some of those key issues that I thought that are very important, so that as we close the meeting, we have got the clear line of march.